Well, this is a history lesson. There are many of you who are older than I am and who have the details probably a little straighter than I do, but we're going to look at the history of Center Church, or early church history, if you want to say it that way. If you're my age or younger, you don't know anything other than the way this church is, that there was a Center Church here. I think Dad quoted somebody years ago saying that history is a dry old subject. It's as dead as it can be. It killed off all the Indians, and now it's killing me. So I hope that this won't be a dry subject. I hope that it's something that can be helpful. It's not just a history lesson. I want this to be a encouragement for keeping the faith. If there are things that we have had in the past and we've lost or are losing, I want to give some encouragement for hanging on to those things if they're valuable. An encouragement to keep the faith. A number of years ago, I think maybe it was 2007, the comp class at the high school here at Pilgrim did a lot of research, and Miriam gave me the list of the research that they had done. And when you see, I'm going to be using the projector here to show some of the lists that they've put together. And so if it looks like I really did an awful lot of research and all this kinds of stuff, it actually is just stuff that the comp class did, and I am showing it for our mutual benefit. This evening I laid out a timeline. I had a 3-foot-long piece of paper, and I laid out a timeline here, and I wrote 1900 on the one side and 2010 on the other side. And I said, Emily, I want you to take this. Oh, I can't see that. So anyhow, we're going to look at our technology tonight. And also, I had, did I push the wrong button? Okay. There, that's better. You got to know which button to push if you're using technology. I also had some encouragement from two separate people that say they really like to be able to see stuff up on the screen. It helps to cement it, and it helps to understand what the speaker is saying. So we're going to try this evening and see. So I'm going to... Now, I forgot to ask how to turn this thing on. Is there a power button here? Oh, there it is. Yeah. The big blue button. Okay. So we're going to wait here a little bit and see if that comes on. So I, instead of having a big long timeline like our preacher friend did to show... okay. All right. I just put it all on a piece of paper, and then I want us to think about some of the things that we want to do is talk about the influences that influenced up to maybe I pushed the button when I wasn't supposed to. No signal yet. Well, one of the things I want to do is I want to talk about the Amish church as it was before Center Church. Let's see, can I turn this way so I can write on it? Okay. Okay. As close as I can tell, and the map that I found wasn't very good, so I just drew some lines, but Dean Road out here at that goes past Pleasant View and goes on, let's see here, I'm kind of mixed up, but runs north and south there. Am I right that that was the dividing line between the, and then Morgan, which is right outside our door here, was the dividing line between the North District and the South District. So there's the East District, the North, and the South District. Those were the three Amish communities, or the three Amish districts in the time leading up to 1958. Now, am I right that Center Church was begun in 1958 and the church was built in 1959? Okay. Now, this is completely blank. So I'm going to be looking to you for help in filling this out. What were some of the influences leading up to the formation of Center Church? Well, there was at least three big things that came into play. Transportation. In the Amish church, cars are not allowed generally for transportation. Tractors are used in the fields, and sometimes they get stuck out on the roads too. There was a push for missions and evangelism, and also in this era we have World War I is over, and we're in the steps in leading up to World War II. So another thing was there was a push to use the English language when visitors who don't speak English are in the services. One frequent visitor was Marion Bontrager, who I think just a year or two ago brought his last class for Mennonite history to Center. But that was he was a regular visitor back in those days. And so if you didn't understand Pennsylvania Dutch and you came, or German, and you came to an Amish service, it was difficult to get much out of it. And the ministers at that time. We have this is a graph that shows some of the a chart that shows when, okay, in 1943 there was a minister ordination and Willie Wagler was chosen by lot it was 1943. And then Amos was ordained in 52. And David L. in 54. So in addition to the to those three ministers who were relatively young, there was John D. Yoder, who was the bishop. So if I get some of these numbers and names and stuff mixed up, you folks who know better, you'll have to correct me. Okay. So is the formation of Center then, is it entirely from the two West districts?
Not necessarily, but there were more of the Amish people that came from the entire community. About two-thirds of the population went to the new.
Okay. Okay. Well, you can't see that either, can you? Can you? Okay. Well, you're doing better than my sixth grade teacher. She sometimes made me write stuff over. Okay, so 1952 we have Amos, and 54 is David L. Okay. Also in 1953, there was a what was the prelude to Mission Interest Committee was in my grandpa Harmon Yoder's shed over here, what is now the Lyndon Rop farm. There was a Amish church conference on missions, or something to that effect. Maybe, was there an official title for that? Does anybody remember that? And I think that, am I right that the next year or two there might have been some more meetings about that? Well, at any rate, Brunk Brothers had
meetings here that many of us attended.
And was that at the fairgrounds?
It was at 53, and he actually attended one of the sessions.
Okay. And the Brunk Brothers, was that at the fairgrounds? And tell us a little bit about the Brunk Brothers. It was a revival meetings, right?
And they were brothers, and they were men of great stature and a lot of speaking ability.
Hey, somebody grab a mic for David, please.
They came around with big equipment and a big banner that said the whole gospel for the whole world. And they had revival meetings in some of the eastern communities, and I think in one case the revivals lasted for like 4 weeks, and they came to Hutchinson then and went from here to Oregon, as I recall. But it is also true you have MIC there, and I think they were organized first in 1953, if I remember right. And as a result of that, and this was prior to the formation of our church, result of that, the Hillcrest Service Unit came into being, and that's the first BS unit, and it predated our churches. We were still Amish at the time, and we drew mostly from Amish volunteers. And so there was this, I just might mention this, that you have some dates up there. The CPS, which was early 40s to 50 to 47, was definitely a factor that influenced a lot of our people, because that was an exposure that, well, it just had an influence. Because a lot could be said, but I think that's enough for now.
Okay. That's the Brunk Brothers revivals? Sent out around a bus, okay. See, in the early 40s, Sunday school was also a new idea, right? At what point did the Amish church bring in Sunday school here? Okay, so Sunday school's been going for a long time. What's now the Ellen Knisley residence down here was home to the Amish Sunday School house around in the late 40s, it was moved in. And Harvey Neisler remembers that he and several other youth helped the house mover move the building in. It took most of a week using volunteer laborers, and he says the equipment was pretty dilapidated back then. But it took him most of a week to move the building the 30-some miles to the current site over there. Okay. Okay. Thank you for that. So there's been a Sunday school in the community, the Amish community, for many years.
The East District Sunday School was where Metalark School is now.
Okay. The East District Sunday School House is the Meadowlark School. Okay, other factors that you think of that influenced the formation of Center Church. Okay, Harvey? Just a minute, we're getting the mic for you.
You mentioned CPS. I suppose 1W service had quite a bit of influence on it too.
Okay, what were the dates for 1W?
The dates?
So 1950 to 1971. That's the 1W. Okay, and here's an interesting... cars are not allowed in the Amish church. There's some concessions being made for automobiles, for people who are in 1W service. It's okay if you are in Denver, Colorado, in 1W, and you use a car to get to your service unit, but when you come back home, you need to sell the car. And I'm told that worked better in some cases than others. Also, there were some medical reasons why people needed cars to get to doctors and so on. And so some allowance was made for that. At what point did the English language in church services, at what point did that change? Some of the time. Okay, David.
Well, when there was a service, the ministers would make that adjustment, and they would simply take the liberty to speak English. And there was, it just gradually changed because more often than not, there was someone in the service who did not understand German, and there were. I know that some of the older people just had enough attachment to the German language, they didn't like to see that change. And I'll just throw this in for what it might be worth. I just read very recently from the Plain Things, Caneyville, Kentucky. There was an Amish couple wrote in anonymously, and they lamented the fact that they still use Dutch and German, but their young people, in many cases, don't understand it very well at all, and just lamenting the fact that they don't go to English so people can understand it better. It's an Amish situation.
Okay. Now, I didn't quite catch that. They're lamenting the fact that they're... Who's using English?
Well, this is an Amish couple.
Okay.
And they have no interest in being anything other than Amish, but okay. They're saying...
it's sad when the preachers use a language that the young people don't understand, and sometimes the preachers don't understand it very well either, was the idea. German language. You know, we're surrounded and saturated with English. We do much better with English than we do with German. And that goes for the Amish people as well.
Well, case in point, here smack dab in the middle of Holmes County, about 20 years ago, there was a young man by the name of Abe Beachy, who was a cousin maybe to Mrs. Ernest Yoder. He told me, he said, well, he didn't understand the German that was spoken in church. He talked Dutch all the time, but when it came to German, he didn't understand what they were saying. I said, well, what do you mean? You've been in church all your life? He said, well, just tune it out when you get to church. And so sounds to me a little bit the same thing, but I was surprised that someone who grew up in the middle of Holmes County in an Amish setting wouldn't understand the scriptures but in German. But so at what point did Sunday school shift from being a German school to Bible school? Okay.
The way I remember it is when we were young, little boys, we learned German.
Okay.
And once we had learned to read, then we read the scriptures in German.
Okay. So in the early Sunday school for youngsters, very young, was learning to read. Okay.
They had ABC books in German. What they say? It didn't mean that you knew what you could read. You learned to pronounce the words.
Okay, you learned to pronounce the words. But, okay, Laverne. Okay, so part of that is due then because English or German is no longer spoken in church. So then there's a shift away from the German language. That makes sense.
Then some people try to think that this German would be much the same thing, but German is a lot more different dialects than the English, I think. At least there's three main ones that I referred to that we hard to understand each other. One is this Pennsylvania Deutsch that the Amish use, regular speaking.
Okay.
What I grew up with. I have a New Testament that is written in Pennsylvania Deutsch. I love it because it talks just like I did when I was a little boy. I read it. I love it. But there is also the High German, which the Amish used then in their services, which is completely different, very much different. It's written in its own language. This Pennsylvania Deutsch is written with English
letters.
Alphabet.
Okay.
Yes. And then there's another one they call the Plattdeutsch that the Russian Mennonites use. And that probably David could tell us more, or somebody, than I can. I understand it comes from a certain area in Germany that they took it along with to Russia and kept it there and brought it here. And I cannot understand them when they talk their Russian, what they call a Plattdeutsch. Yeah, that's right. Some German.
Low German and High German and Pennsylvania.
To me, what the three that I think are so different is the Low German, what they use, the High German, which the regular German people use in general, and then this Pennsylvania Deutsch, which they say comes from a certain point. And is it southern Switzerland? Austria, okay. And we have, there's a Victor Ipp that has been working for Interfaith Housing that we contacted because of our CASP program and worked very close with him. He was here, and his ancestors, just in the last, I think, 20 or 30 years, moved from Russia instead of coming to America back in 1875 when these Russian Mennonites came over. For some reason, they didn't get to come, but they were released then and went back to Germany. And he has the real German, this Victor Ipp. And his parents are here, and they plan to come visit us on Friday. And we're looking very much forward to it. And they can't talk English, but Victor is very well with English. He actually married here then and lives here in the area. To me, those three Germans, I'm sure there's more that somebody could explain. Those three are kind of piquant to me.
Hand him the mic there.
One other thing that I think is pertinent in our time, that is the Swiss Amish. That's Bern, Adams County, Indiana, and Allen County, Indiana. And they came at a later time than our forebears did, and they have a dialect that is significantly different than our Pennsylvania Dutch.
Well, I remember reading something about Martin Luther, and I think it was Martin Luther who, in an attempt to bring German scriptures to the people, came up with High German as a common language that is now in use today, or something that's probably offshoot of that, but I think that's where the High German came from, pulling a lot of different things together. Harvey?
It was the Luther translation that we used in church services,
yeah,
that we used for our devotions at home.
Okay. So the Luther translation was the one that was used. Okay, let's. The time is zipping right along. Any other comments about pre 1958? Okay, Nathan?
I obviously wasn't there, but something I've heard a lot about is the.
He's coming with the mic.
I obviously wasn't there, but something I've heard a lot about is the midweek Bible studies precursed the beginning of Center. And, you know, there was, I hear about a real hunger for the word that was there. And like my grandparents, I think, used to bring the buggy every week to come to Bible study.
Somebody give us a time. When did that start? And does anybody know, did they do then like they do now? Mostly lay brothers have topics, and not the preachers so much. Well, am I right that in an Amish service, the only, just about the only way that a lay brother or sister has input is, if they don't have Sunday school, is helping to sing. Is that right? So the midweek services let everybody, even even young people get in on that and get to study and so on. Okay, Ollie.
Well, I grew up, sometimes they asked the lay members for testimony.
Okay. So lay brothers are sometimes asked for testimony, but as far as having the opening or teaching Sunday school, there wasn't much of that. Anything else that you think of that has had an impact? What about World War I, World War II? Okay.
World War II was CPS, and then it was the Vietnam, or Korea and the Vietnam War, I think, for the 1W program.
World War I, there was no predation for kind of cancer detection, and it was a fairly short interval of many years. World War I, World War II, and so it was very different. It was not that difficult to be conscientious detected in World War II.
Okay, so World War I is up here. World War I, II is late 40s.
War was in going, and that's when the 1W program was in effect.
And you said that was in the 50s.
50s on into the 60s, as I remember.
71 we have here, so I... Okay, somebody that knows more about that than I do said that. Okay, so here we are. We're so there's John D. Yoder, and how did John D. Yoder get onto the scene in Kansas? Somebody help us out on that.
John D. Yoder had lived a lot of his adult life in Thomas, Oklahoma, and he moved to Nowater, Oklahoma. And when that broke up, he moved to Anderson County, Kansas. He came from Anderson County to Reno County, and I'm going to say in the very late 40s. Maybe somebody has something more specific. He came at a time when the bishops here, Jacob H. Miller and Levi Helmuth, were both eligible for retirement, and he brought a fresh energy to the leadership when he came.
And about how old would you say John D. Yoder was when he came?
Yeah, good question. I suppose he was already 65 or more, but that's a guess. But I'd like to bring this in sometime. This was building up to where something needed to happen prior to 1958. And I still think that church divisions are regrettable and should be avoided when possible. And we met together, John D., Amos, and Willie and I, repeatedly to try to work something out and that would work. And it came to the place where John D. said, much as we don't want to do it, he thinks there's no alternative except that we part ways. And he said, let's keep it as peaceable as possible. And I still respect the man for that.
And that's 1958, right?
Right.
Obviously, maybe go ahead. Can help us. The beginning of Plainview would have also been about 10 years.
That's 1948, right? Beginning of Plainview.
So that would have also had some kind of influence, probably.
Yes, very much.
Why do you say that? What influence did Plainview have on... Okay, Plainview is a member of the Conservative Mennonite Conference, right? We're getting that.
The speakers that came in... were very much on their page at that point. And I would say that the speakers that came in may not have been quite on the main page of Conservative Conference even at that time. When I say that, Conservative Conference, one reason that that didn't look appealing to us was because they had an executive committee that could invalidate, overrule local practices, usually on to the left rather than center or right.
Yeah, and Amish churches, for the most part, work, I think the word is autonomous.
Autonomous.
Well, autonomous. Right. Thank you. So the church is right here, and it has its own leadership, and it comes up with its own set of governance. And so that's what this group was uncomfortable with, was somebody from upstairs sending down a ruling that wouldn't be acceptable. Is that pretty close to? Okay. Okay, and we have 10 minutes to cover 60 years. Well, actually, we're not going to cover 60 years, but I am just going to show a number of ordinations that happened. So here in 1976, and believe it or not, I can remember back that far. I remember when Gary and Paul were ordained, and then there's a deacon ordination where David Yoder is ordained, and then in 96 there's a bishop ordination where David Yoder is ordained. So then to replace him, Ronald Miller is ordained in 2001, and Laverne Miller is, then he leaves, so we replace him again, and Laverne Miller is chosen by lot in 2003. Then minister ordination, Julian is in 2005, and the others have to do with other churches. Now, I also found interesting, some of the research that they did showed a list of people who have taught school. And this may not be completely current or completely 100% accurate, but did you know that, now all of us know that Mary Miwashigee was a teacher, is a teacher. Lauren Kipfer, did you know that Lauren Kipfer taught school? How about David L. Miller? Did you know that David L. Miller was a school teacher? Arlen, that's not so far removed. Dwight and Julian were teachers. So there's lots of teachers that have gone out from here. Okay, so now I want to show you a list of local projects that the church has been okay. So you can see there's Center Aid, there's the Center Missions Project, and at the time this was written, we were still working on a credit union, the Kansas Youth Chorus, the Pilgrim Schools, and then there's Hands of Christ and Rise, Hands of Christ and Rise Kids Church, Rescue Mission used to be in there. So there's lots of projects that we have we've been involved in, and we continue to be involved in. Also, some people went to college, and I thought I had a list of. So I want us to think a little bit about how higher education has influenced our thinking and our church. How did higher education factor in the formation of Center Church and its development? How did 1W and CPS and getting out of Reno County, Kansas, how did that help to reflect our values and our worldview as it is today? Harvey?
For myself, we got somewhat involved in the First Mennonite Church in Denver, and we went to their services. We even took communion and feet washing with them one time, and so some of those influences impacted the way, and I'm sure it was the same with the others that were, there was quite a delegation from here that served time in there, and then there was others that went to Topeka and other places too. That was one of the things that brought the influences of 1W brought our service units into being. In Denver, it wasn't very, very closely organized. There were, as the people got younger, we could see things getting more out of hand. There were people from plain churches, or rather plain Mennonite churches, that came in there and sent 18-year-old boys in there that just completely got lost there.
Okay, so when conscientious objectors go to Denver and other Topeka and other places of service to do required service, they sometimes lost their way. And so at what point then did Hillcrest and some of the other service opportunities start up, and were they a part of that concern?
Yes, it started up in 1953, and it was that 1W's could serve there and did, as far as that's concerned. But Harvey's touched on something that I'd like to pick up on a little bit. It's true that the 1W program was very different than the CPS program, because in CPS we had our base camps and special projects. For the most part, the draftees were units unto themselves. And it is true that in the latter part of the period where they worked in mental hospitals some. But Lyle Hostetler is a bishop in the Tampico-type church, and he was a 1W. And he had a vision that if there's ever another draft, he would want a safer place for our young men to serve than the 1W program was. And he was, as much as any one person, the spearhead that brought CASP into being. And so this is still a live issue. And on the subject of higher education, that could take up a whole evening. But it does have some influence. And I think for the most part, those who went to get credentialed for specific work rather than just to have a better education. I think there's a big difference. In other words, to teach school or to be a nurse or whatever.
Sure. Well, one of the things that I wanted to point out was that from a close-knit Amish community, then some people going to Denver or Topeka or to Eastern Mennonite College or Heston College or other places like that, it did open up eyes. It did make people aware that the mission field is bigger than right here in the Amish Church in the North District in Reno County. So that helped to... I realize that it may have had some other effects as well, but opening up the mission's awareness movement, if you call it that, and drove the need for cars and other transportation, and there may have been some other reasons too, but that was one of the things. Um, it's time to stop. I'm going to say just a couple of things that I suppose this will make me sound old. Some of the concerns that I have that I see as I look back over the 50 years of my short life. I see the activities that we engage in on Sundays. Driving and maybe sometimes winding up a vacation on Sunday. That concerns me a little. Eating out on Sunday. I just want us to think about, is this, there's a whole bunch of empty space that we haven't even talked about. There have been a lot of changes in the past 50 years, and I just want us to think about the direction we're heading or the direction we're moving, and encourage us to keep our eyes open and keep paddling. Thank you very much for all the help.
Thank you, Brother Marvin, for whetting our